Yeah, what does the term hacking mean to you?
Well, to me, hacking has meant a lot of things. Nowadays, it pretty much means taking something, typically computers, and using them in a way that the creators didn't really intend for them to be used in a new and creative way to get some sort of objective accomplished that the original creators, the hardware, software, never imagined or intended.
So essentially, it's basically tinkering, taking something and making it your own. You're there's an element of tinkering and becoming a creator, not necessarily just being a consumer, but trying to take more control of your technology, I guess. Do you think that we're seeing a more of an emergence in maker spaces and hacker spaces?
Yeah, and I have a pretty interesting thing to say about that. We're definitely seeing more hacker spaces sprouting up all over the place, which is an awesome thing. It's a great thing. If anybody listening to this has never been to one, there's one in Birmingham, there's one in Huntsville, and this is Alabama, so hey, you know. But there's definitely more of these places. It's really more, it's kind of part of a movement towards people being more creative and I think the internet has a lot to do with that. There's, you can look up information on how to do pretty much anything that you want, so it's really limited by your own sense of what you want to do. And these hacker spaces are places where people can come, and even if they have no experience, people are gathering who have knowledge and skills and can help you learn. They just want to help other people learn the things that they're already passionate about. And another thing about hacker spaces, they're almost always home to a 3D printer of some kind. And I think this is an important is the beginning of a paradigm shift in consumer culture. I think it's a decentralization trend of people moving from, instead of going to Walmart or wherever and buying their cheap plastic crap, they'll just go to a makerspace and have the cheap plastic crap printed out for them. And instead of finished products being shipped all over the place, only raw materials will be shipped, and will lead to much more efficiency and less waste and better products for people who want certain things. And I think it's better for everybody, and it's a new, I think is the new way things will be done in the future.
That's actually a pretty interesting point that you make about the prevalence of 3D printers nowadays, and now they're becoming, you know, more and more affordable. But yeah, I mean, like, you know, if somebody wants something, they can just print it out. They can design it in, you know, 3D designing software and then print it out. So if you, like, you want a couch, you can design a couch and then print it out or whatever, literally. So that's kind of interesting. Where is that going to leave copyright, or how is that going to change? Because I can imagine a lot of people are going to be upset about this. Certain people are going to be upset about this.
Well, copyright is not going away. I mean, it survived technological advances so far for the past hundreds of years. It survived VCRs. It still survived MP3 players and iPods and the internet and computers and cassette recorders and all of that. And it's putting the means of production into the hands of the people rather than letting it just be concentrated into the hands of a few. And that happened with the printing press. It's a similar thing, but copyright for the foreseeable future will still be around. I'm not saying anything for or against it, but it will become less and less relevant, I think, in terms of the future, because, you know, you can only enforce so much. So the internet is kind of this free form thing where people can basically find ways to get the information that they want. And that's the good thing about the internet, is because you can find almost any information that you could possibly ever want to know. So people can educate themselves, people can read. I think access to the information is extremely important for the future of mankind, really. Even though that's dramatic terms, that's the truth of it, because in developing countries and places all around the world where people can't go to school or do things, they don't have access to trained, you know, academics in their area. If they have the internet, they don't necessarily need them to be, they don't need people to come and teach them. You know, they can decide for themselves what they want to know and then go get that information and teach themselves things, which is empowering and betters the lives. It has monetary benefits to people who are impoverished. It improves quality of life. It really, I'm sure, in some ways has saved lives that would otherwise not be, because people didn't have information that they needed.
I definitely agree with you on that there, that having open access to information is crucial to any free society. But I think right now one of the dangers that we're facing is the issue of the erosion of net neutrality, basically internet becoming just like cable television, where you have these big companies, internet service providers, providing these, like, providing you a fast lane and then, providing a slow lane or whatever. That can be very dangerous if we have this heavily corporate, influence on the internet. Net neutrality, I think, is something that really needs to be defended, or else we'll see the erosion of what you were talking about, the internet as this open thing. What are ways that we could fight against that and help preserve net neutrality?
I think this is part of a larger trend that's happening, not necessarily because of the government or because of money, but, I mean, that's certainly a factor in it. I think there's a cultural thing happening, an ethical thing happening in the character of people, all kinds of people across the board. An erosion of the ideas of liberty, freedom of speech, that people have a right to speak out against injustice. I see more and more people have the mentality that, you shouldn't speak up against somebody you work for. You shouldn't speak up when something is wrong, because, especially against somebody in authority, you should never speak, truth to power, as the seeming attitude that is starting to pervade people's minds and hearts. And I think it's an ethical issue. It's a issue in the character of each of us, that we should prize liberty that we have. I mean, it's the First Amendment in our Bill of Rights. It's our first right given to us, speech. And so much of our liberty has been perverted in the past decade or so, where money now counts as speech, but speech, is not protected. Actual speech is not protected. People who speak out are not protected, though the secrecy of certain campaign contributions must be protected. But I think over time, the more these people abuse the people's rights to speak freely, the bolder they will come, the more brazen they'll become. And once they cross a certain line, I think there will be an enormous backlash for what they have done and what they're continuing to do. But it's up to each of us to think critically about things in our daily lives, the tiny microaggressions that we experience, of people telling you don't bite the hand that feeds you if you speak up about your boss in the workplace, stealing hours from you from your work, for example. Or it's up to you to make a stand and make a point to people. And while they may choose to punish you for your speech, they can't unhear your words. And it will stick somewhere in their mind, and it will stick somewhere in the minds of other people and spread. But it's up to us to fight repression. It's up to us to fight people trying to silence those who speak out against unethical behavior, against straight up breaking the law. But it's up to each of us to be brave and to take the risk and to say the right thing when at the right time when it matters, and not not just to yourself or on a blog, but to the people who need to hear it. But as far as net neutrality goes, that's, since the internet's such an important instrument in our education, our speech now, it's a vast portion of our experiences in life, in daily life. I know I spend tons of time on the internet. It's important to guard our liberty, our, you know, lawful right to speak on the internet. But on the other hand, it's important to note that these people will try to silence people speaking freely. They'll try to limit access to information. But that's the whole hacking thing coming back around. Because people will always, always find a way to work around that. They'll always find a way. And I'm doing my own work in this. I'm trying to start my own internet company, where as a mission statement, we protect the privacy of people, not to be warrantlessly wiretapped by the government or have their traffic monitored. I think it's up to younger people coming up, because the older generation will die away, and it's certainly apparent that there's not enough jobs out there for us, and they don't really care, you know, about the younger generation, and that, you know, now we're all saddled with enormous debts and can't find a job when we're told that, you know, we needed to go to college to get a job and have a decent life. It's up to young people to start their own businesses and make their own jobs and replace the obsolete systems and ways of doing things with something new that's better and faster and more what people actually want, and not just what the people at the top want and want to get as much money for themselves as possible. And I think it's important for us to take matters into our own hands and try to make a new way for ourselves, rather than thinking that the old system is going to give us a hand, because they're really not.
Well said. Well said. I think basically what you're saying is that we need to make the old system irrelevant. That's the way we fight back, by creating new systems. There are new ways in which we can organize society. I think that's basically the gist of what you're saying, and the way to fight back against net neutrality is to essentially just find a way. Talk more about your internet project that you're working on that you just mentioned. Talk more about that. What exactly are you doing? Talk about some key points there.
Okay, well, I'm really just starting small here. My first project is to start a wireless ISP, and I would basically charge affordable prices to the people who live around me, because I know that, you know, they're living in the same situation as I am. I know that they are, you know, affected by the economic climate, and that I also know that the internet service providers that exist in a state, and this is why they can threaten net neutrality, is because where they operate in their markets, they're basically a monopoly and they have no competition. So they can charge whatever they want and provide as crappy service as they care to, and there's nobody who can basically come in and undercut their price or provide a superior product. I just want to I want to provide internet access to people who would otherwise not be able to afford it at a price point that they can afford, and like I said, it's important to the internet is important for people. These people are impoverished. If they can't afford internet access, you know, in their homes, you know, how are their kids gonna, you know, research stuff? I mean, think about the school systems. They put almost as little money into it as they can. So children go to school if they're poor and, you know, they don't have resources to go, you know, have private tutoring or get all this information or drive to the library. You know, the internet is there. It's the world's library for everyone. And all the information is freely available. And I think that's such an important thing. For me, most of the things and I've learned and the skills I've learned, I've taught myself really from the internet. I've learned more things in terms of actual knowledge and skills from the internet than from any college or school or institution. So that's one reason why I think it's really important. Another aspect is that it would be protective of people's traffic and what they do on the internet, protective of their speech. And, you know, like, I would love to be a large scale, like, I would love to have the capital that, like, say, AT&T or Charter or, you know, Bright House or, you know, Verizon has. I'd love to have access to stuff like that. I am starting small, so I don't have much, but I'm gonna do what I can with what I have to try to be the change that I want to see in the world. And I've seen this net neutrality stuff bubbling in the background for a couple years now, and I know that, you know, there may be a day coming where they finally get their way and cut off vast amounts of the internet for most of us. So that's why I'm working to try to create something and try to build it and grow it. Because I want, you know, unlike the large internet companies, I want to serve what the actual customers want, what the people want and need, which is fast access to the world's information. So that's what I'm trying to do.
Okay, so you mentioned some examples of alternative technology, especially moving off of current internet infrastructure. Yes. There we go, yeah. Talk about the Pirate Box, exactly what that is.
Okay, so the Pirate Box, as I have come to understand it, is a device that's a wireless hotspot with a file sharing server attached to it that's mainly for offline, quote unquote, file sharing. That is to say, not connected to the broader internet. This is a pretty neat little device and hardware software combination. It's definitely similar to what people did in the days before the internet was really established, and that was transferring files just on disks from person to person. Only instead of using the disks as a medium, you have these little Wi-Fi servers all over the place. And this is an awesome idea. I think more people should deploy it. I'm thinking I was thinking of deploying something similar, but not. I didn't know about Pirate Box, actually. And you could deploy these things if you have just something that can act as a server, connected to a wireless router, or just something. You could have a tiny computer with a Wi-Fi little dongle, and that could create its own similar network. I'm sure. I suppose that's what the Raspberry Pi device was doing. I totally support stuff like that. That's really more of just one example of darknets, which I think is if the internet is basically hijacked by these large corporations and what they think should be the speech of people. Definitely darknets will be the response to that, and systems like these with, decentralized, disconnected, disjointed nodes of file sharing and communication. I think it's a great idea. I think more people should do it, have a community darknet where they can share files to each other, books, music, whatever, movies, Think of your neighborhood all shared, movies with each other. I don't know. It's just kind of like the internet version of what people are doing already in real life.
I think if you were to do something like that, it would become more community owned and people would feel more inclined to take care of it and feel more of a connection toward it rather than, keeping all the data on corporate servers. You mentioned the word darknet. Can you kind of go over the definition of what that means or what exactly is a darknet?
All right, so the darknet or a darknet, first of all, I guess you would say there is the internet, and the internet is called the internet because it's the internetwork that connects all the networks that are connected to that network. So it is a network of networks, but it's basically the network of all networks that are connected to each other. Whereas darknets are networks, and they may have, websites on them. They may have services like streaming music or video. They may fulfill other functions. But this network is not connected to the larger internet. So people from outside the network, though it may be large or small, can't really access it. And so this would mean it would be not as accessible to government agencies trying to oversee it, or corporate agencies trying to oversee it and gain information about you that they then use for profit without, giving you anything in return. It's made stronger by public means of cryptography. Sometimes darknets exist within the larger internet using cryptography. And they're just their own self-contained network with their own chat rooms and file sharing and websites and things like that. So the darknet's just really a private internet. And this can be done in your own home. It could be done in your neighborhood. It could be done with wires. It could be done wirelessly. There's many different options.
Yeah, and I definitely think that is a viable
method of fighting against corporate influence on internet and getting back net neutrality by moving off and finding different solutions. Another alternative technology is cryptocurrency. What is your opinion on this emergent cryptocurrency we have?
Okay, well, of course, the most well-known cryptocurrency is going to be Bitcoin nowadays. I have my own things to say about Bitcoin, but before Bitcoin, there were other electronic currencies, cryptocurrencies. There was something called e-gold, which were electronic fractional reserves of gold, basically like the dollar used to be, only electronic, and but I believe that system of currency was shut down by the Secret Service or someone like that, I'm not sure. Then there's Bitcoin, and off of Bitcoin have spun different derivations. I know there's something called Dogecoin after Doge, the meme.
There's quite a bit of cryptocurrency, different types and available. So yeah, there is a lot of them.
But so far, what I've seen, Bitcoin was hopeful at first, but what it seems like now is it's kind of been mainstreamed. Speculators, after the market collapse in 2008. Shortly thereafter, within a couple of years, investors started looking for new places to speculate on. They're just like speculating. First, they speculated on oil and drove the price insanely high. Then they moved into everything from like Burning Man tickets. They went into Bitcoin. They've gone into all these different strange ways of hedging money and deriving profit and speculating is very interesting and weird.
I mean, it's not a complete and total solution. I mean, it is still a solution from, the market. So you're not necessarily getting away from that. You know, it can become more mainstream like you were talking about. So it's not essentially, it is a new thing. It can be a seed for change, but at the same time, we have to remember that it still is a, prone to that. Let's see. What other ways can people take control of their technology? Take back control of their technology.
Okay. Take back control of their technology. Really, I think I've been thinking about this, and I've been doing a lot of creative work, like making things, and I think if you don't have tools, you can't really make as much. So I think tools are really important. Access to tools is important. So in that way, I think like hackerspaces are really awesome because they give people who would without a hackerspace, they wouldn't have access to tools. They wouldn't have space to work in. They wouldn't have people to, guide them and, like, help them with their idea of trying to be creative. And it's not just about hacking. I think there's a broader trend there. Like, in this city I know, bicycling is a growing thing, and there's bike shops opening up. Young entrepreneurs are starting their own bike shops, there's a bike co-op, and that's a similar place where there's shared access. It's not 100% free, but it's extremely affordable for people who would otherwise not have access to tools, not be able to afford the high prices in the gentrified bicycle shops, to be able to fix their bikes and get and learn how to fix their bikes. And I think this is like I think this is coming about because of economic forces, but I think it's a good thing in a way, because people are learning how to do things and make things again, and our creativity is coming back. And I think there's a somewhat of a larger trend growing of people, instead of being consumers and just mindlessly sitting back and consuming things, now people can make things. Maybe in the future, you know, maybe we'll go from being a consumer economy to being a crafter economy or a hacker economy, making things creatively, expressing ourselves, and just like just being more human, I think.
I totally agree. I think that any type of technology that could bring us together is really a good thing. Anything that alienates us isn't the way I'd like to see technology going. With that being said, what is your opinion on recent like virtual reality technology and now Facebook buying Oculus Rift? What's your opinion on that?
As far as Facebook buying Oculus Rift, my opinion is, like, it's just something tech companies do. It may seem totally unrelated. Facebook probably saw what a lot of people see in Oculus Rift, that it's really an awesome, really interesting piece of technology. It's the future of things. It's definitely, our technology is getting to a point where virtual reality is more of like a realizable goal. And Facebook, a lot of people don't like them because of their creepiness of their actions and things they've done in the past. But I mean, when you think about it, a lot of corporations own a lot of other technology corporations, and they're equally as creepy or evil. I think it's really more of a monetary business thing, and it probably will not affect Oculus that much. And even if it does, they're really just making a technology that somebody else is going to see that technology, get a similar idea, and make something, you know, their own version. And we're just going to see more and more advancement. I mean, you have Google Glass, you have Oculus Rift, you have all these different sort of head-mounted displays, like competing technologies emerging. And I think in the future there will be even more products like that that will be geared toward augmented virtual reality. This is a tool that, you know, I wish I already had. People play video games, you know, they have a heads-up display. If you had that ability in real life, just think of how, you know, if life were a game, how many more points would you be making if you had your information about your health, your ammunition or your money or whatever, like right in front of your face at all times. So, it'll be interesting to see one day. You know, today people, the social critics talk about people walking down the street, you know, they're like just staring down, texting on their phone, and nobody interacts. Like, just wait till they make a portable Oculus Rift, like, and like wearable keyboards or something. People will be walking around staring into space and like wiggling their fingers around. It'll be very interesting to see.
That's where a lot of like legislation might come into play, because like somebody's gonna do something stupid with all wearing it, and then people are gonna be like, you can't do that, and it's gonna become, you know, I mean like drugs, you know. I mean, people doing salvia and then like posting them doing salvia on YouTube and shit got that illegal in some states. So I mean, I don't know. Okay, so I guess last thing I wanted to say is, like, you were talking earlier about social media. Are you concerned at all with Facebook's recent like privacy changes and the recent experiment that they did? Or does that concern you at all, or should it be concerning? And it's like, is there a point that we should be considering like disconnection and boycott of certain technologies?
Okay, I can talk about that. For me, I've known for a long time these companies has come about in the past decade, couple of decades. Like Google is the first of them, and they're always gathering information and about me and my usage. And basically it's like, think about how great Google is. It's the best search engine. Everybody uses it more than like all other search engines. And the reason they're able to do that is because they gather so much information. Facebook, you know, I've just accepted in the Web 2.0 world that they're going to be gathering information. And I'm just a little, you know, space monkey. I'm just the experimental guinea pig of all these, like, computer scientist data miner people. And they're, I think in a way, yes, it's creepy, but in another way, you could look at it as we all get to be, like, focus group tester people, and products come out based that really are like people study our opinions and our tastes and what we like, and they come out with a product that caters to those likes and opinions. And is it creepy in a way? Yes, because I'm not consenting every time, but in another way, like, one day we'll be able to live in a society where you don't have to hide who you are or what you think. People will be mature or enlightened enough to accept people how they are and not rush to violent judgments or, you know, bigotry or hatred. Just imagine if we were all telepathic and we could not lie.
I think people really get pissed when Facebook and other sites decide to sell the user data to, like, third-party advertisers. I think that's when it gets really creepy.
Well, yeah, third-party advertisers, but, I mean, when's the last time, you know, an advertisement really affected you? I mean, media... It's said that media is now our natural environment, and you have to navigate that media. And even with advertisements, yes, it's pervasive in our culture, but that is kind of how the way things are now. And, you know, media is everywhere, and it's just how you control that media that you see, that you consume. You have to be selective now because it's everywhere. And, Facebook using my information to make advertising money, that's always been a thing on the internet. Instead of having commercials, they do sociological research on all of us, and then the data they get from that, they sell. Like, in exchange, I'm getting a free tool to, like, socially organize, be up to date with the news that I want to see and things I want to hear about. I can, you know, plan group events and find, you know, I can do so much. It's all offered for free, and they got to make their money somewhere, unless you wanted to pay for a social networking website. And I think not many people are going to do that, except for dating or something.
I mean, I think people have to remember that it is indeed voluntary, and there is always the option of, like you said, creating these dark nets or these decentralized nodes where people can share information. I think that is another viable option.
That's the beauty of the internet, because it's pretty equal, at least it has been until now. It's like, if you want to create an idea, all you need is a web page, and people will come, basically. And everyone, if you can get a web address, you can be heard. Your voice can be heard.
Well, that's all I have of that conversation. And I'll be out recording more conversations, so in the meantime, you folks take care. Bye.